Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is going to be a fun one.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, first up on Atlanta Business Radio today, founder and principal with Intuit Factory, Mr. Roop Singh. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. This is very exciting.
Well, Roop, we're here because of the folks at the Robinson College of Business from GSU. We've been working with them quite a bit over the last year or so. And it came to our attention that they're starting a kind of a blockchain strategy event, and your firm's kind of running it, or you're partnering with them. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we partnered with Robinson College of Business to launch this first of its kind in-person blockchain strategy bootcamp. It's a four-day bootcamp that goes into a lot of details on grounding you in blockchain technology and helping you understand, is this a threat or opportunity or a risk for companies and entrepreneurs like.
Now, Stone and I just had the pleasure of being at the FinTech South event that was here at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium a week or two ago. And there, it seemed like it was financial FinTech events. So it was financial technology firms from all over the world. And quite a few of them were mentioning blockchain. Stone, I can't speak for you, but...
We did a whole block of interviews and they were off the chain.
I don't think that's what they meant, but maybe you can educate us a little bit and explain maybe a little blockchain for dummies.
Well, we'll try not to go off the chain here. But yeah, blockchain has been very popular. Last year was probably the most hype it has received, from Forbes to Wall Street Journal to Fortune Magazine to Harvard Business Review to World Economic Forum at Davos. Everyone's been talking about blockchain, and it's not a surprise. You know, fintech has been a leading industry to lead the charge on this new foundational technology. But if you really start researching, you will find that over 30 industries are being disrupted, and there's plenty of companies. I have a bunch here that I can share that have invested in blockchain technology and actually are at a stage of doing either proof of concepts or even launching commercial products. And some have even been in adoption already.
Now, there's talk of cryptocurrency. And cryptocurrency, I believe, uses blockchain, but cryptocurrency and blockchain are two separate things.
Wonderful. Right? I couldn't have said it better. So here's how I like to say it. Both came from the same roots. If you go back to the origins, blockchain was first really well used in terms of distributed networks plus encryption in a cryptocurrency, which we now know as Bitcoin. So to me, they have linked trajectories because they have the same origins, but they have distinct destinies.
And then the way someone explained it to me, which I thought was pretty clear, but you can tell me how accurate this is. The person said, if I give you a dollar, you know that I gave you a dollar. Mm-hmm. And that all blockchain does is create transparency to see the path of that dollar from its origin to wherever it's at right now, where everybody can see all of the steps.
Right, exactly. That's quite well said. Let's explore that a little bit. So let's say if I do give you a dollar, the question I have for you is, how do you know that I actually gave you a dollar at what time?
Right, so I have it in my hand and I can look at the clock.
Right, perfect. That was the old way of doing things. Now, if we increase the number of transactions, the model that we have been following in the world for the last 200-300 years is, let's say the four of us have a set of transactions. I give you a dollar, you give him 20, Stone gave Chad another 50. How do we keep track of this? Back in the day, we used to write it in our own paper. Mm-hmm. And then we got to this centralized authority, which is the banking model. And we said, okay, whatever the bank said, a centralized authority, who we all trust and believe, is this true state of the transactions. If bank said Stone give you $50, that's what it must be, mm-hmm. right? So now let me propose a different idea. Let's say that we have these transactions, and as they happen in the moment, we actually publish those transactions on the share wall in front of us. We all can see it. It is visible to everybody who's been part of those transactions, and maybe even perhaps people who have not been part of those transactions. So it's very open and transparent. And then we publish them as soon as they happen on the particular timestamp. And we go further and we say, let's encrypt them, make them immutable, make them something that cannot be adapted or changed or tampered with in any such capacity. So what that does is gives us a shared state of the said ledger. And that, in essence, is blockchain.
And then the benefits of that, that level of transparency, I can see it, what you tell me the benefits of being able to see every transaction in that ledger.
Right. So there's a few. One, let's talk about ownership. Because this quote unquote ledger is not owned by any one central authority, any one institution, any one entity, we all collectively own it. This is one of the big points of discussion. Oh, who owns the ledger? Well, we all have decided a set of rules that we now call consensus mechanism, and we all own this ledger together, whoever is participant in this particular network. No one person, entity, or authority decides what is the true state of the ledger. And also, they don't own it, so they cannot tamper with it. The other big improvement from the previous paradigm is these transactions are now considered to be immutable. Immutable means they cannot be changed. So if we had a transaction, let's say 10 years ago, we still have a record of it and we can go back to it and we know that nobody would have tampered with it. It wouldn't have changed ever. And we can believe that transaction to be true. Does that make sense?
Right. So it's like when I bought my house, I can look back and see the other people who have purchased that land.
Absolutely.
Up to a certain point.
Yeah, absolutely. So what it allows us, you shared a very good example, is to create a certificate of ownership, if you will, right? Or certificate of authorship in some other area. So let's take real estate. If I could prove that there is this title of this particular land, which has these particular details, and you, Lee, are the current owner of this particular land. Now, if you go back to a lot of developing countries, land title fraud is a very common issue. And in fact, it is, if you imagine the scale of economic development some countries have achieved, the basis of it was fundamentally that people could own land and we could prove the ownership of land, and then we could get more economic development as a result of that. In developing countries, that is still a big challenge where there is so much fraud and the record keeping is not really efficient. So what blockchain can allow us to do specifically in real estate is to easily go back and check on all those land title records, as you said, and then it becomes more easier to transfer this to the next owner.
Mm-hmm. So now I can see in some industries where transactions occur that transactionally, where it's like I'm buying this object from you and now I own this object and then I sell it to someone, then we all can see that path. But blockchain's going beyond that, right? Like blockchain's also in the media, or blockchain's also in healthcare.
Absolutely.
Like, so is that just to trace kind of the drug, the path of the ingredients of the drug to being the drug to the patient? Like, where else is it touching?
You are amazing. I don't need to do this. You know all of this already. So what you've just described, I call it the chain of custody use case. So you can track an asset. An asset could be anything. You know, before the show started, we were talking to Chad about diamonds. Diamond could be an asset, or a particular drug could be an asset. Once we've established this particular asset is authentic and we've put it on the chain, that's step number one. After that, we can ensure that we track this asset throughout its journey. Wherever it goes, we put those transactions on the chain. So this has huge implications on supply chain, essentially moving all the goods on this planet. And then furthermore, looking at specifically, let's say it is drugs, to track drugs, how they are being distributed globally. And it can also help in identifying if there are fraudulent drugs, if there are drugs that are getting into people that shouldn't be getting to people. So there's so many implications of being able to prove the authenticity of a particular asset. So another way to look at this is, we have come from a world of the internet. Internet has been around a few years, and it was the internet of information. It was the age of sharing information, and information sharing became easier to do. And you saw the implication that, you know, on the media industry, on the publication industry, on the video streaming industry, etc. This is the second evolution of the internet, where now we can have things called digital assets and we can put them on the chain. And that allows us to share value. We are going beyond just sharing information. We can share assets like diamonds or track fish or track wine or track drugs. And that allows us to have an internet of value, which is a whole another evolution of the internet.
Now, you mentioned the chain. The chain is, that's like saying the cloud, right? Like the chain isn't an actual thing that exists. It's a digital thing that exists.
You mean to say it's not a physical thing that exists?
Well, it's not. Well, there's not one chain, is there?
Absolutely. Yeah, there is hundreds of chains now. And in fact, if we start opening up that Pandora's box, there are public chains that can be publicly, you can be a part of that network because it's open and public. One example would be the Bitcoin blockchain or the Ethereum blockchain, but you can also develop a permission-based blockchain. So let's say the four of us decided to do this together and we said, well, nobody else can join us. And it's only the four of us that need to see the data, and we decide on what the rules are. So we can start our own private permission-based blockchain. Now, there are proponents of that in the enterprise world that say this will be the future. And there are proponents of the public blockchain that say that would be the future. There is this sense also that if a lot of businesses are not on public chains, which are now being almost treated as public infrastructure, so to say, then they will lose out on the innovation and the advances in the technology from a public chain perspective. If you want to go back to another era, and you mentioned cloud computing, so let's go back even before when we had the internet first, there was this thing called the intranets. Companies were scared and they didn't want to share their private data on the internet. And they said, okay, let's just develop our own little thing within our own company and let's call it the intranet, right? You guys remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are seeing somewhat of that evolution as well, where people are getting more comfortable with this new evolution. We went from internet to intranet to cloud computing, which is slightly more distributed. And then now we're getting to a more decentralized world where it's even more distributed and decentralized than cloud computing as well.
Now, does it have a use, like you mentioned, all four of us decide to do something together. Let's say we decide to start a company.
Mm-hmm.
And then we each put in $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a transaction. We create our own little mini blockchain, which mm-hmm. is possible, right? That has a value of $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then we say, this is our own thing. And then I decide, you know what? I'd like to not play anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Can we open that blockchain to the public and let somebody else see if they want to pay $12,000 for my share of the company? Can we use this as a kind of a substitute for shares or how people are, you know, kind of funding businesses?
Right. So we're moving towards what we call tokenization. So you could tokenize your asset, right? And this is slightly different from shares of a company, because when you buy shares of a company, you're actually buying an equity stake in the company. Whereas when you issue tokens of your network, you're not issuing equity. It's a very clear distinction. Having said that, we can go to your paradigm, which is, well, can other people participate in it in some way or fashion,
right?
And that's what we have seen now with so many companies in these new advents of capital raising mechanism called the ICOs or token issuance events, wherein we can issue a set number of tokens. And we can issue them to the general public or to accredited investors. And people can invest. They can buy these tokens and they can invest. Now, there are a lot of regulatory concerns around that, especially in the United States. But what we have seen is, if you look at the state of Wyoming, for example, they've issued just very recently, my guess is about 2 months ago, that they have ratified and issued four laws which establish a new class of assets called the utility tokens, which allow us to do things like this.
So then say we issue, our group of four issues 100 tokens.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do we set the price? Or we just make up a price and then the public can buy or not?
Right. So I want to mention two different distinctions here. One, if you are issuing these tokens with the intention of other people being able to leverage this as a security, meaning that they expect to get returns out of it, that's called a security token. If, on the other hand, this blockchain that we developed has a particular utility, let's take an example of your radio show, and we say we will monetize all the content on the radio show. You've been doing it for years. You have so much content. People should be able to listen to it. We want to expand the reach. So let's issue these 100 tokens, and what people will get it, let's set the price at $1, peg it to $1, just for argument's sake. So everybody who takes, let's say, 5 tokens now can view or listen to X number of content. So what we've done here is we are talking about the utility of your network and what it can allow for the participants or the users to do. And we are moving into the direction of utility token. It's a little bit more complicated than that. I'm making quite simplistic here. But once we have a utility-based network where we can successfully prove and ascertain that there is utility for people to join it, then all you're doing is you're saying, hey, here is a utility item. Here is a product or service that you can use. Why don't you people buy my service in advance in order to use this utility, in order to listen to the content, in order to utilize the service? And that's one way that we've seen happen.
After they've used that $5 worth of value, then it goes away, or what happens to it?
Yeah, so you bring up a very interesting point. As we've seen the advent of this technology, what we've also seen is advent of new business models. So because these things are really transforming the state of technology, we have now the ability to develop new business models, which is where you're going. So I think what needs to happen more and more, and we're seeing this already, is a lot of economic professionals, economists and such, coming together with technologists to create these new set of business models, to see how we can develop this sort of environment and this incentive mechanism. So why should somebody buy even one token, and what happens to it when they have used it? Does it get synced? What is the source of the token in economic terms? And how do we keep this ecosystem thriving? How do we keep this set of individuals adopted and in sync with the network, and how do we ensure that we actually go beyond the basic business models that we have been used to?
Now, in this boot camp that you'll be running, in I believe the dates are June 15th, 16th, and June 22nd and 23rd. So what stuff are you going to cover? I mean, it gets into the weeds pretty quickly. Is this a kind of a basic, kind of the basics of blockchain? Are you going to be getting into specifics on how a business can leverage this?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is actually going beyond blockchain 101. I think we'll all, the industry is at a stage where we need more rational, more thought out strategies to implement this technology. So here's a few points that we would cover. We would ground you in blockchain technology and smart contract fundamentals. We'll help you identify trends shaping the blockchain ecosystem. We'll help you discover and conduct critical analysis of your blockchain use cases. We'll help you identify whether blockchain is an opportunity, threat, or a risk for you. And you will learn about adjacent spaces. See, blockchain alone is not enough. We'll learn about how artificial intelligence, data analytics, and economics interact with this space. You will understand how decentralization, digital assets, token economics, self-sovereign identity are revolutionizing the internet. You'll evaluate blockchain companies and token issuance offerings using our proprietary diagnostic model. And we'll understand how this intersection of business and technology can be adopted in a tactical way or in a strategic way.
Now, who are the ones who should attend? Like, are they the CEOs? Are they just consultants? Who should attend this?
So this is really designed for senior executives and seasoned entrepreneurs who don't have much time on their hands to sit and study this for months on end. So this is a nice packaged offering where you can go into the details pretty quickly, and eventually we'll end up towards the last module. We'll end up with looking at different business models, as you mentioned. So it's really CIOs, CTOs, chief digital officers, or VP of digital transformation, VP of process transformation, VP of strategy. And on the entrepreneur side, seasoned entrepreneurs who have companies and technical products that are in the technology space now, but they would like to pivot in the blockchain space, we will help them to identify those areas. And the third segment of people that are already registering, they are in the investment community. So this has become a huge vehicle for investment, and we will help you identify your investment thesis and help you understand which one of these horses to back. You know, investment folks get all kinds of pitches all day long. Which ones are the ones that will really be adopted in the future? And we'll look at macro trends and do a critical analysis of each of these investment theses as well.
So financial services, banking, we mentioned healthcare and supply chain. I threw in media, but you tell me if that's valid or not.
Absolutely. So I'll give you an example. You have so much content today. We all use platforms like Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, etc. We put our words, our pictures, our thoughts on it. Do you get paid for it today?
I don't know. Are you going to pay at the end of this? It was free to come here.
I would be. So there is a platform called Steemit, which is a blockchain-based media platform that you can monetize your content on today, which is a radical different business model than the Facebook of the world or the Instagrams of the world, where you just publish content and you don't get any benefit for it, versus the companies who actually use your content to sell it to sponsors, mm-hmm. right? So you can find, this is one example in the media industry. There's plenty more where, let's talk about another one. Let's say you are an artist. You produce music, you have songs, or you produce music videos. Back in the day, it was a big challenge for artists to even distribute their content, and we sort of alleviated that with the advent of the internet. You can go on YouTube now and put your content out and be found and be known. And there are plenty of people who made made a career and got a lot of fame just on that, which is an amazing thing. The second evolution of this is, can we track your content and ensure that you are getting the credit for it? As the royalties are issued, as the content is distributed and used, maybe in countries far away, can we track and give you the credit and the royalties for it? And blockchain media companies are doing that. In fact, Spotify recently acquired a company called MediaChain, whose only intention was to understand how blockchain can impact the media industry.
So it sounds like the boot camp, this is the first of its kind, right? The first of its kind in-person kind of boot camp.
Absolutely.
Like this. And that's it'll be held at the Robinson College of Business?
Yeah, it's in the Bucket Center of the Robinson College of Business.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, the website?
Yeah, the website is robinson.gsu.edu/blockchainstrategy.
And then you can go there and you can sign up or learn more about it. Your day job, though, is with Intuit Factory?
Yes, I'm the founder and principal of this consulting and education firm in the blockchain space called Intuit Factory.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Keep up the good work, man.
Thank you. It's been exciting.
Hey, how about staying with us? We got one more guest we're going
to
visit with.
Yeah, I would love to hear.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us with Union Diamond, Mr. Chad White. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So what did you learn in that last segment?
I learned that I've got so many questions on that one. I've got 3 pages of notes here that I can't wait to talk to Roop off the air about how this could impact things down the road.
That's exciting.
So tell us a little bit about Union Diamond. What are you out there trying to do for folks?
Well, I think we're really out there trying to change the whole jewelry buying experience. I came into the industry a few years ago, and one of the things I realized is we really don't sell anything anybody needs. So our business is all about hospitality.
I was going to say, you may not want to lead with that. No, go ahead.
So I think it's really, really giving everybody a Ritz-Carlton experience. For example, when you buy jewelry, it's there to really celebrate life events, anniversaries, graduations, significant things. And it should be fun and not a overwhelming or a...
It could be intimidating.
Intimidating event, exactly.
Now, in your world, are you... is it more personal, more one-to-one, or is your store like, you know, the ones that you go to the mall and see?
We are more one-to-one. Mm-hmm. And when you come into our design studio in Midtown, we don't have any cases between us. And it's more like going into a dining room and looking at something in a china cabinet. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. It just makes it much more personable. And we don't have that barrier between us, which is, you know, I think psychologically can be intimidating.
Now, when you got into the business, what had you been doing prior to this?
I had been in aerospace and defense, and I'd been in the dog biscuit business for 15 years. So it's a neat industry to come into with a different set of eyes and different set of experiences. Mm-hmm. Because I look at it as, how can we make this different, fun, and I'm not entrenched with, this is how I've done it for 30 years.
Right. So you have kind of fresh eyes and you're looking at it in a different manner.
Exactly.
Now, when you're working with your clients, how are they finding you? Are they buying your diamonds primarily because of your web presence, or are they, you know, walk by your store? Like how do they come upon you?
We've got a large web presence. So we do a lot of international selling, and it still amazes me that people will, you know, spend in excess of $100,000 over the internet for a diamond. And I'm really glad those people are out there. What to me is more rewarding is working with that client one-on-one. Mm-hmm. You know, each stone has got a unique character. It's a little bit like matchmaking. So there's a stone that will speak to you, and really talking the customer through the trade-offs and what's important to them. Is it size? Is it color? Do they want a flawless diamond? And, you know, it really comes down to there's a personal connection.
Now, we do a lot of work with female entrepreneurs and hear a lot of our shows talk to that clientele. Are you finding that as women become more and more successful, that they're not waiting for a guy to buy them this dream diamond, that they're kind of shopping for themselves?
We're seeing a lot of that.
That's a change in the market, isn't it? How you would go to market.
It doesn't change my strategy so much, because what I've learned in this business is, from a marketing standpoint, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. Because you've got the user of the jewelry, or the one who typically wears it, and then you've got the purchaser.
Right.
And it could be that significant other. It could be a self-purchase. So the marketing is not as clear cut as I would like or have had in other businesses.
Right. So that's my point, is that maybe even a decade or two ago, it would be all about the guy, focusing on the guy, that you should buy this. This is a certain percentage of your salary should go to this and things like that. Whereas now it's the woman celebrating a success or something for them. It's personal to them. They don't care if the guy hands it to them or not. They just want what they want.
I agree with that somewhat. I think before there was still a lot of marketing towards the female, because ultimately she would influence the purchaser. Right. And now what's happening is that marketing to the female could be an influencer or the purchaser.
Mm-hmm. So now, that being the case, does that change how you do anything? Like, do you have to make the stores more female friendly, or are you just doing what you used to do?
We're not doing, I guess, a typical store. And we had a large store, I call it traditional, in Vinings. Mm-hmm. And it was time to change that model. So we went from a large store to a small, what we call a design studio, to make it a more intimate experience. Right. We found that larger cases just would overwhelm people. And we could have a small selection. And now with FedEx and, you know, other logistics services, we can really have anything for the client the next day. So our focus is really, our preference is having a appointment ahead of time, gathering some information, and setting up a very customized, tailored experience for them.
So it's very concierge oriented. Where are you creating unique pieces for each customer?
We will do that sometimes. So whatever you want, we will make happen. Mm-hmm. And some will do something that's standard because they really like it. And others will, nowadays with technology, it's so much easier to design something custom for that person or individual. And that's an experience in and of itself. I mean, it really adds value and a lot of emotion and intention.
Right, it's personal.
And extremely personal.
And so when you walk us through what happens, so somebody hears of you and they have, like, what's an occasion that they typically come to you?
We do a lot of bridal and engagement. So, you know, a new soon-to-be groom wants to propose. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of traffic from Google at, you know, jewelry store near me. And so they'll come in and...
So they physically come in.
They will call us on the phone or they'll physically come in.
Are they more educated today than they were 5 years ago?
They're extremely educated. And margins on white diamonds are not all that great. Mm-hmm.
So then they come in and they're like, do they know what cut the fiance wants, or do they know any of this?
Some may know exactly what they're looking for because their fiance has given them a very specific list. Right. This is what I want. This is the size. This is the cut. And let's not deviate mm-hmm. from that. Others may not have a clue. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we want to do is, if it's going to be a surprise engagement or he's not spoken to her about this next step, is find out a lot about what she like, what's her style, and then we can help guide them toward some suggestions, because it's also, you know, there's a fashion and style component to it as well.
And so you're working with the guy who's probably clueless to that stuff, and you're kind of guiding the conversation.
Exactly.
And then you got to work within their budget, and then you're just going to come up with, okay, look at these three choices, and then they're choosing from that.
So, exactly. So we'll narrow it down, and it may be, and they'll give us feedback. Love that. Don't like that. Mm-hmm. And if they don't like it, we want to ask why. What is it you don't like about that? So we can really narrow it down.
All right. So what I like about this, I think, it sounds like it's all about the experience. So we'll be married, Holly and I, 29 years this Christmas. We're going on the big another big trip, like to Italy, to celebrate 30 years. But when it comes up to that 30th year, let's say I want to get her something really nice. So I could set up an appointment, and Holly and I are coming in at 2:00 on a Thursday. And this is an experience where you roll out the leather thing or whatever. And it's just you and us talking, right? And letting her try on stuff and asking her questions.
Exactly.
I just like the prospect of that more than walking into a big mall store or me trying to guess, here, honey, after 30 years,
right.
You know, it is literally bring me a rock, and you are probably going to get it wrong. So I love that. Now, here's what I have a question for you on the business side of things. I got into the business radio business with a guy who was already in the business. I laid out a little bit of money. There's some equipment costs. You know, we have some pretty decent space as executive suite kind of co-working space goes. There's a financial investment. There's cash flow we got to stay on top of. But I can't imagine going into the diamond business. I mean, do you just have to have a ton of cash? Do you have to have really good credit? How do you get in the diamond business?
Well, first you get out of the dog biscuit business.
But do you have to have like a line of credit to like this just crazy? How does a regular guy get in a diamond business?
Well, a lot of what happens is we work with diamonds that are on memo. So, for example, if you're coming in with your wife and she wants something pretty awesome and big, my suppliers will FedEx things in.
Okay, so I'm talking to you beforehand.
Exactly.
And saying, look, it's been 30 years, dude. I've made a lot of mistakes. Nothing under 2 carats, you know, or whatever, right? And then we talk a little bit, and on memo is the...
Exactly.
And so these people trust you.
They do. And that's why it's working with the right partners.
Right.
So it's been a fascinating business in that people are either straight up and are extremely trustworthy, or all the horror stories you hear about, you know, they're one.
Well, haven't heard them, and I don't want to hear them.
Yeah, we'll keep those.
But there are horror stories.
The people we work with are all straight up and trustworthy, and that's
okay. So it's on memo. So you got to have some stuff there.
But exactly.
A lot of this stuff that I'm going to use that phrase with some of our suppliers. I'm going to need that on memo. But all right, so it's on memo for this inventory, and there's this group of people who trust each other. it sounds like there may be some application for some Roop stuff in your world, tracking the diamonds and tracking the stuff and what it's really cost and what it's really worth and what people like. Margins, cash flows. I mean, is this just a crazy money hand over fist business? Or, you know, sometimes I know, like in the car business, I think the margin on any one car is not all that great, particularly after you've financed it and it's been sitting on the lot for several months. Is it like that in the diamond world?
It's different than the car analogy from the standpoint we don't have a lot of inventory. So it's the wholesalers and our partners that carry the inventory.
And it's this real kind of just in time, high trust, on memo thing.
Exactly.
It makes it work.
Exactly.
So for you, the key is you have to be great at developing relationships.
That's exactly right. We want everybody to have a phenomenal experience.
And tell their friends.
And tell their friends about it. And when you have that experience with us, we want to move and celebrate the rest of your life events with you.
Right.
You know, knowing that your anniversary is coming up, I'll want to reach out to you ahead of time and see if there's something you're thinking about or just get it on your radar screen 3 months out.
Right. So now that's important because you might meet the person at the bridal stage, but you want to stay in contact with them through all the stages. Right. You don't want to be forgotten. Well, after they got the engagement ring and then, you know, who's Chad, right? You have to stay kind of connected.
Exactly. And that's the great thing is we get to work with people and families and really celebrate their successes mm-hmm. with them.
So now when you're doing that, what are some of the elegant ways that you stay connected with them? How do you stay on their radar through the 5-year, 10-year? They have kids, then their kids get married and all that stuff.
For me, I'm a little bit old school, so I like to pick up the phone and talk. Mm-hmm. A lot of the
nice
new clients.
Yeah, it is nice, right? And refreshing,
it stands
right?
Out.
A lot of the new clients, they like an email or texting. Mm-hmm. So we try to make it, you know, as personal to them or what works for them.
All right, who's we? Is it you and a puppy? Is it you and a staff?
We is me and my wife, and then we've got some phenomenal design consultants or salespersons in the office.
All right, so here's why I'm asking. Again, in my business, I'm feeling more and more blessed on this, Lee. You know, if I make a bad hire, and even if I put them in this chair, you know, they might screw up an audio, they might not be nice to you, and there's a cost to that, right? Or something like that. But they're not going to, you know, steal $100,000. Tell us about your recruiting, your development, your training. Again, you've got to associate yourself with some top caliber people.
They are rock stars and they love the business. And, you know, attracting people to the jewelry business is easy. It's finding the ones that get the vision of what we're trying to deliver in terms of a phenomenal experience. Those that will go the extra mile and are thrilled when they've really helped, you know, that nervous soon to be groom pick out something for his fiance. And we love the stories. I mean, we know we're done something right when we're getting photos from the bride and groom the day of their wedding.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Now, but how do you train that? Are you searching for people who are from the jewelry business, or do you prefer not from the jewelry? Like, would you rather have somebody who worked at Ritz-Carlton than somebody who worked at another jeweler?
That's difficult for me to say. What I've learned over the many years in business is it's hard to train hunger and desire. Mm-hmm. If I've got somebody who's hungry and wants to excel at something, I can teach them about diamonds. I mean, that's just, it's very technical. It's, you know, those are things that you can learn or, you know, send them to a online training or send them off. The hunger and desire and wanting to go that extra mile, I've never figured out how to instill that in somebody.
And but the personality trait of a person in your business, I would think, has to be so high touch and just service oriented and not transactional. Hey, buy my diamonds, kind of, you know, old school car salesman, right? You got to go complete opposite.
Standing room only. Buy today. What's it going to take? Right. You can't do that, right?
Well, you're laughing, but I'll tell you my own experience of buying. I've been married 30 years as well. And we went to a jewelry store here, a local chain, 30 years ago. And the guy, I was with my wife now, and he said, she's like, I don't want to be here when you buy the diamond. And the guy was trying to pressure me into, you got to buy now. If you don't buy now, I can't hold this price. It was like very classic salesy, the way you think. And then she's like, well, I don't want to be here. And he takes out of his pocket 50 cents. He goes, go next door and buy a Coke to her. Wow. I mean, so that's my experience of how this went down. Ouch. I'm sure that's not what yours is. It's like in your
place. You should go see Chad and team on the next one.
Yeah, Lee, come down and see me, because we'll start it off with, we're not going to send her next door for a Coke. We're going to open a bottle of champagne and really make it an experience, because we want you all to feel great about the value you've received, the experience you've had, and we want to see you again. I mean, we want it where you got, you all can't wait to come back and see us again.
He wants you to bring your wife and your girlfriend.
And both of them. So, but that's the level of, but that's a different experience in your shop.
Yeah, and I see that in the industry, and that is why there's tremendous opportunity in the industry. That's a business model.
Right.
It's not our business model.
I don't think what happened to me is unusual.
It's not.
Right.
Wow.
So now, for you, you mentioned you have an online presence. What percentage of your business comes online, and what percentage happens in the stores?
We're probably 60% online.
Really?
Wow.
Wow.
So do you think that was going to happen when you started?
I did. I mean, to this day, it still baffles me that somebody will, pay that much money for a diamond without seeing it.
Right.
However, technology has really helped that process with photos and, 360 degree views of the diamonds and the high definition video.
Well, and how about this, I don't know, authentication, this blockchain? Yeah, weigh absolutely. In on this a minute, Roop. I mean, that can really facilitate this too, right? Some version of what you guys were talking about.
Absolutely. So I would look at Everledger. It's a project that started with tracking diamonds, just so that we can identify that these are not blood diamonds, where they're coming from. And they have done that in a very short amount of time. They've been very successful in getting a lot of this industry adoption. And just imagine if you could put this diamond in front of your customer and actually can authenticate and prove the story. Where did it come from? When was it mined? And how did it even get here? Just imagine the quality of experience, and even for that matter, your prices that you may charge for such a product would drastically improve.
And the peace of mind from the customer standpoint.
Absolutely, yeah. Peace of mind. And the peace of mind that you are buying something that it's not tainted. In this millennial era, there's a lot of concern about where things come from and how are things being consumed and where is that money going to. So blockchain technology, as we just discussed, can actually really... One thing that you must remember about blockchain, if you could take anything from this story, is that it allows us to create trust and transparency. And we see that clearly in the case of diamonds here.
Well, Chad, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you to learn more, what's the best way to find you?
One is pick up the phone and call us at 770-319-9155. Two, you can find us on the internet at www.uniondiamond.com. And you can reach me as well at chad@uniondiamond.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Roop, also for sharing your story and letting people know about how they can learn more about blockchain.
Yeah, definitely. And they can find us on intuitfactory.com.
Okay, good stuff. All right, Stone, ready to call it a day?
Yes, sir.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.